Baseball season is around the corner, and we will be giving out our favorite futures picks on the Just Baseball Show in the lead up to opening day. To go along with that, BetMGM has a brand new offer for our listeners. Use code JUSTBASEBALL and place your first BetMGM Sportsbook wager through the BetMGM Sportsbook app of at least $5, and you will receive $150 instantly in additional winnings regardless of your wager's outcome. How to get this offer? Step 1. Download the BetMGM Sports app on iOS or Android or visit BetMGM.com. Step 2. Sign up and deposit at least $5 into your newly created account. Step 3. Place a wager in the amount of at least $5 at standard odds price. Step 4. Once you have placed a bet, you will receive $150 in bonus bets regardless of the outcome of your wager. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369 in New York and call 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 21 plus only, please gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, and 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use code JUSTBASEBALL and get $150 when you bet at least $5 on your first wager.
Bonds, hit high. It's a game.
Wednesday, March 13th on the Just Baseball Show, and we are doing an X Factor for each team in the American League East and the National League East. Jack, Peter, Just Baseball Show, presented as always by BetMGM. Peter's going to give you the whole spiel in a moment, but it's like the children's book, Peter and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day, with Gerrit Cole undergoing an MRI and Aaron Boone saying it's, quote, difficult to envision a scenario where he's ready for opening day. So just when you get amped up for Yankees baseball, Mick Abel strikes out Juan Soto and Gerrit Cole gets hurt. Save the MGM thing. Just like, take me into your brain, take me into your heart, take me into your gut right now as Yankee fan Peter Apple.
I opened the stupid Twitter app.
Yeah, that app sucks.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, it sucks on days like these where a report goes out that Gerrit Cole is, this is just horrible. I opened that stupid app and it says Gerrit Cole has not been recovering after starts like the Yankees would like him to, like Gerrit Cole would like himself to.
Yeah.
And then he has to get an MRI because of an elbow. And how many times on this podcast did we report there's an MRI on an elbow? And how many weeks later do we then confirm the report and say it's Tommy John? This is a nightmare. That's how my Yankee feeling is, that the season is already over.
I don't want to do that yet. It does feel
obviously
good.
Not.
You no, I know.
My gut.
I know.
I gave you the full. That ain't journalism. That's just straight up feelings, and it sucks. And it's March 13th.
It sucks. And honestly, it sucks for non-Yankee fans too. And it may suck for Yankee haters. I never root on injuries. I don't care how brutal of a fan you are. I wouldn't call what you do a fan if you root for injuries on your least favorite team. But I do think that this, like, stinks for Yankee haters too, that want to see him flounder, because you want to see them flounder at full strength. Now they're without the best pitcher on the planet. As a baseball fan, I'm very upset that we are not going to get to see the poster boy of durability make his 32 starts in 2024. It feels like the first time in forever that he hasn't made 32 starts. And I don't have the Baseball Reference page in front of me, but I guarantee you, like, this guy was on the mound all the freaking time. Very Jose Berríos, right? Cole is the durable, great pitcher in baseball. And now, all of a sudden, we see it again. We see the UCL. This is an epidemic, and it struck the best pitcher in the game.
Talk to me friend to friend, because you just gave, you know, a great little speech about the journalism side, yeah. Right? It makes sense. It sounds good out of your mouth.
Let me
friend
give you
to
this.
Friend, your feelings.
Let me give you this real quick. 2014, Gerrit Cole. All right, 2013, he makes his debut. 19 starts after he started the year in AAA. 22 starts in 2014. After that, 32 starts in 15. 21 starts in 16. He was a little banged up. 33 starts in 17, 32 starts in 18, 33 starts in 19, 12 starts, which I think was the most in baseball in 2020, 30 starts in 2021, 33 in 22, 33 in 23. This guy hasn't missed time in his life. And
okay.
Now we're going to
okay.
see this. Sorry. I had to give the numbers. Now,
I know, but I even hate hearing the numbers because it's like, well, now he's due for one.
Yeah.
Like, don't read me the numbers.
That's
friend
what
to friend.
Yeah.
You hear Gerrit Cole MRI elbow on Twitter. Your initial gut reaction right now,
in terms of a U lens or in terms of a baseball lens?
In terms of a baseball lens,
obviously,
you know, I'm freaking out and it makes no sense, but
right,
you on the outside looking in, do you think it's going to be okay, or did you also get a deep,
no, it was
heart-dropping type feel?
Yeah, it was total doomsday. It was total doomsday, and I was pissed, and I was sad because, listen, I will watch almost every Gerrit Cole start. I will watch every Gerrit Cole start that I can. He is the gold standard of pitching in Major League Baseball. There's a reason he was our best pitcher in baseball heading into the 2024 season. On the mound all the time. But not only that, he dots 100 on the lower outside corner, and then he follows it with a crazy diabolical knuckle curve. Like, he is so much fun to watch, and we take him for granted. And so much of my frustration with the Yankee fan base is I feel like they take the best pitcher in the world for granted. And that's what I mentioned to you. I think when I first saw it, I felt cheated of what we could see the Yankees do this year. I was like, they just depleted their pitching reserves for Juan Soto. And now you got to tap into something that's not there.
I guess there's somewhat of a bright side from this, I guess. And it's just a rumor.
Beater's going to make the rotation?
Yes, maybe. But it's more of they've re-engaged the White Sox, according to sources.
Bob Nightingale.
Yeah, Bob Nightingale. And that's where I'm at right now. I'm using, according to sources, that it's just a Bob Nightingale tweet, which I hope is true. They re-engaged the White Sox.
I will say,
per Cease,
Beater looked really good on Monday in Clearwater. Really good.
Did he look as good as Gerrit Cole? Did he look as Gerrit?
No, he's not Gerrit Cole. Nobody's Gerrit Cole.
Then what are we talking about?
I'm just saying, if Beater is forced into a five and dive situation, he's a fine option for the Yankees.
Awesome. I hope we win 83 games this year with Clayton Beater giving us five and dives.
I mean, there are two starting pitchers that are still on the market that apparently we're looking for $200 million.
Yeah, but one won the Cy Young. I would like him now.
You want the Cy Young winner?
I would like him. I would appreciate his services.
So I do want to just kind of transition immediately into the X Factor thing, because I want to start with the Yankees.
Can we talk about how Judge is also banged up? And, you know, he's going to be taking some off days. And the way Boone, it kind of pissed me off. When the report first came out, Boone made it seem like it was absolutely no big deal. Of course, he's supposed to only get two ABs. That was the report, right? They're just resting him, getting ready to go. And then a day later, oh, he's banged up.
It's not
an oblique thing, according to Judge, but it's still something. It's just, the season hasn't started yet.
I saw mid-spring beat up. That was the report that I read about Aaron
what
Judge.
What the hell does that mean?
And nobody gets beaten up in spring training.
Aaron Judge said he's been swinging basically every single day since the season ended to get ready for this season. So through that time, he's been working on himself. And when you work on yourself for that long, I guess you can feel beat up. I don't know if that's his normal training regimen before the season, where he's swinging constantly before the season starts, but it all sounds horrible. The fact that we're getting reports that a guy's beat up in spring training games when he's not even playing a full game makes me want to tear my hair out of my head.
Well, and it's not even like it's DJ LeMahieu or, you know, Kyle Higashioka. I know Padre, but it's not even like it's Kyle Higashioka. It's arguably the second best player in baseball this year, maybe third best player in baseball. Like, it's a tough one, man. And it's a tough pill to swallow. I didn't know being beat up in spring training was a thing. And frankly, I don't think it is. I'm not concerned about Judge. It sounds like the timeline is fine for opening day. And frankly, opening day is like all I care about, really. If you're good to go for opening day, it's fine. Cole, I am very worried. But Gerrit Cole's absence, who knows how long, takes me immediately into my first X factor here. And the premise of what we're doing is this. We are going to go through, so we're going to do the AL East and the NL East today. We're going to do the AL and NL Central on Friday, and then AL NL West on Monday. And we are going to pick one X factor each team. There is no communication going into this between us. So if we have the same guy, it just furthers our point even more. And we're going to lay out why we think they're the X factor. I'm not going to run you through this guy's numbers in 2023 or like, hey, his last 3 years, what do they look like? I'm just going to tell you situationally why I feel like they are the biggest X factor. And the biggest X factor for me for the Yankees, I think, especially now with the Cole news, is the biggest X factor in all of baseball. Carlos Rodon needs to be way, way, way better than he was in 23. If the Yankees get the guy they paid over $150 million to, if they get 2022 Carlos Rodon, I'm still concerned with the absence of Cole, but I'm far less concerned because they have an ace. The idea of signing Rodon was co-aces. Last year, that guy wasn't the sixth best starting pitching option that the Yankees could turn to. Cole is the biggest X factor in baseball. Rodon is the biggest X factor in baseball.
Yeah, it was funny. I was on the phone with my dad, who is an enormous, enormous Yankee fan. And what we've been talking about basically all offseason is how big Carlos Rodon has to be this season for the Yankees to make it far, right? Let's say Gerrit Cole is totally fine, which I doubt he is. But let's say in a perfect world, the MRI comes back clean. He's just a little bit beat up and he'll be totally fine. Carlos Rodon still is the X factor. Maybe he's not now the biggest X factor in the sport. And if Cole goes down, that's exactly the option. The Yankees finished 18th in ERA of the staff last year. The pitching hasn't been the biggest issue for the Yankees in the last half decade. I think it's been mostly the offense, a lot of guys getting banged up. So I tried to pick an offensive player just to be kind of different than Carlos Rodon. But what am I going to say? Is DJ LeMahieu like the mega X factor here? Is Anthony Rizzo the mega X factor here? Gleyber Torres, like, we know what Judge and Soto are going to do. So it has to be a pitcher. And Carlos Rodon just has so much more upside than a guy like Nestor Cortez Jr. So if he can achieve that upside, the Yankees are so much better of a team. But if he doesn't, and he looks like the 23 version, the Yankees are destined for mediocrity once again.
I think you could make a case for Stanton being an X factor and just being available.
Definitely.
And if Stanton is a 40 homer guy, that changes the dynamic of that lineup entirely.
But here's, like, why I'm sick of it. Here's why I'm sick of it is because every offseason it's about how good Giancarlo Stanton
looks. Stanton.
And then he's hitting 190 and striking out 30% of the time. I mean, that is last year, but it's just gotten progressively worse. I don't think Yankee fans should believe what they hear every offseason and how good his body looks, and then just to see him perform like he normally does in the regular season. I'm, of course, hoping that he bounces back. It would be enormous if he did, but it's much more likely that Rodon had an off year, bounces back to what he is, rather than Giancarlo Stanton just re-finding what he had in Miami when he hit 59 home runs.
That's gone away.
So what are we even hoping for Stanton? That he can play DH and hit 30 home runs? I think there's a decent chance that the Yankees are trying to cut bait at the end of the year with him. Obviously, they can't with the salary.
Yeah.
But it's like, if he continues to do this in the lineup, he can't field, he can't run. And if he's not hitting for power, what is he even doing in the lineup at all?
Yeah. I hear you. I still think that you can dream on, I don't want to say 40. I think you can dream on 35 with Stanton still.
Sure.
Sure. But even then, right, how big of a difference does that make? I do think the argument could somehow be made for Volpe being an X factor. I just expect Volpe to tick up big time this year. And Rodon needs to have a more night and day transformation than Volpe does.
Yeah, the Yankees are a big boom or bust team. Like, there's a lot of guys where you think to yourself, man, if he has a great year, this team can win the World Series.
Yeah.
Right? You look up and down the roster, only a few years ago, these guys were all at the top of their game. So if they can refine something, there's a lot of guys, but it has to be Rodon. Yeah. Because if Rodon can look like he did on the Giants, because I don't even blame Cashman for that deal. And maybe that's my fault, because I would have given him a similar type deal.
He hit the market at the right time. Like, he had an excellent contract here.
And like, Gausman was found his stuff in San Francisco, then goes to the Blue Jays and becomes one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball. Right? There's a pipeline there. Maybe Rodon found something in San Francisco, goes over to the Yankees, big time deal, and everything just falls apart.
And the thing is, he was actually coming off of back-to-back years where he was really good. He finished, I think, top five in Cy Young voting in 2021. He just didn't have the innings. He tapered off at the end of the year. But he put together back-to-back years before he hit the open market, again, where he was really, really good. So I get it. I want to jump to the Boston Red Sox here. I went a little bit off the beaten path, I guess. I think Tristan Casas might be a layup answer. I went elsewhere because I expect Casas to be really good. I expect Casas to factor in to the foreseeable future of the Boston Red Sox with a Brian Baio, who they just extended, with a huge money Rafi Devers. Trevor Story is there for better or worse. Masataka Yoshida is there for better or worse. I'm looking at a guy like Sedan Rafaela. If Rafaela is playing an elite center field, which we think he can do, I think Aram has a 75 grade field tool on him. If he's playing an elite center field at Fenway, can handle that triangle and can hit just enough, can show the power, can show the wheels, he's not going to walk, but who cares? If he looks like a good 6 or 7 hitter, I'm very happy with what I have moving forward.
I think that's a good one. I stuck with the offense as well, even though I think that Nick Pivetta could definitely be an X factor for the Red Sox, right? You already know that you have Brian Baio, and I think Red Sox fans who watch Major League Baseball kind of know what they're going to get from Brian Baio. He's not a number one, but I think he could potentially have the upside of a 2, but he's probably more of a 3.
Did you listen to Arm in my conversation about Baio?
I did not.
So that's what we were saying. It's like they paid him to be a consistent 3 or maybe like a top end 4. They didn't pay him to be a 2, and he's not a 2.
I think that's what he is. And that's a solid pitcher to have, right? A young guy with the potential of being a 2, but is probably a 3. Those guys don't just grow on trees.
No.
And I think Cutter Crawford at this point, Red Sox fans can rely on, and is a solid starter. I think he's probably a step below Brian Baio. I think he has good stuff. You know, Garrett Whitlock, Tanner Houck, you know, both of those guys could potentially be X-factors. There's a lot of X-factors in the Red Sox rotation, but the reason I brought up Nick Pivetta is I think he really found something, and I think if you asked, like, who would be the guys who could potentially strike out 200 guys, I think Nick Pivetta is in that conversation. The strikeout rate in the second half was among the elite pitchers in Major League Baseball. The stuff looked so much better than it was. I think he found something. But the X factor that I'm choosing for the Red Sox, Trevor Story. I mean, if Trevor Story, right, by Fangraphs, he is projected to have 22 home runs and 23 stolen bases. If he can be a 2020 guy again for the Red Sox, it shores up a position that they invested a lot of money into and have seen almost no production. And right. Trevor Story has been banged up. He's been kind of thrown to the side. It's been a couple years removed from really elite production, and even in Coors, people are like, is he a Coors merchant? Is he not? And a lot of the people who said he might be a Coors merchant might have been proved right in the early goings. But Trevor Story at 31 years old can rewrite the wrongs. Am I saying that Trevor Story is going to be a 25-25 guy? No. But I'm saying if he is, that is a major X factor for the Red Sox.
I like that pick because I have no idea what this version of Trevor Story looks like.
Nobody has any idea.
He's That's a mystery, the thing.
Red Sox fans don't, right? We know Trevor Story is good, but he just has not been available. And when he has been available, it looks like he's hampered by injuries.
Yes.
So if you're telling me that a healthy Trevor Story is on the field opening day,
yes,
kind of with this fresh start, no real big expectations anymore. Of course, he's paid to have big expectations, but I think that hype has kind of fallen, right? He's nowhere near our top 10 shortstops list.
No.
We didn't even consider him in the honorable mentions, right? So a guy like that who has the potential and has been a top five shortstop at times, a couple years removed from that, I think is an enormous X factor for the Red Sox.
I really like that pick. Okay, so I went Rafaela, you went Story. With the Yankees, we both went Rodon. Let's jump to the Baltimore Orioles here. And the Orioles, I think, can slice the offense any which way, and it's going to work. Kobe Mayo looks like he's ready right now. Is Mayo going to be in the opening day lineup? I don't think so.
He could.
He would be the five hitter on a billion other teams, but he might be in Norfolk to open the year. Colton Cowser is having an out-of-body experience this month. That guy might be the fourth outfielder. Where's the space for him in the outfield on opening day? Westberg, Mountcastle, O'Hearn, there are so many different ways that you can slice the offense and it still looks hot as hell. So I go to the rotation and I'm not going to key in on Bradish because I think Bradish is just going to try and spin opponents to death again. It worked at a sub 3 ERA last year.
If he pitches.
So I'm not going to factor in health to my X factor pick. Burns is Burns. He's the ace. If he falters, he falters. If he doesn't, that's what we expect. Grayson Rodriguez is my X factor, the guy that was just on the show last week. I left listening to that conversation that you guys had with G-Rod very excited to see what he can do this year. And frankly, after the All-Star break, he got me super excited for what he can be this year. And in the spring, any videos that I've seen, I saw that home plate view in that bullpen, and I was like, you look amazing right now. But it was a tale of two G-Rods last year. Before the All-Star break, very well documented, a 7.5 ERA. ERA dropped from 7.5 to 2.5. But the number I want to pinpoint is the long ball. 45 and a third innings. His first 45 and a third innings of his major league career. How many home runs do you think he allowed?
A lot.
13 in 45 and a third. That's pretty much a homer every three innings. That's two homers a start if you go six. After that, 76 and two thirds innings after the All-Star break. How many homers did he allow?
Four.
Three.
Mm.
How does that happen? A change. That's how it happens. A change in Norfolk. He worked on shit. He came back. He was awesome. If we get that second half G-Rod, the sky is the limit and a trophy is the limit for the Baltimore Orioles this year.
It's so funny. After the conversation with Grayson Rodriguez and then going into X Factors for the Orioles, I thought Grayson was too easy. That's how much he proved to me in that conversation that I think he's going to be great. And in the second half, he was one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball. So I just decided, of course, he's the X factor. So I get why that's your answer, but I just went a different route. And I was looking.
So I was lazy. I was lazy is what you're saying.
Not at all. I was just.
Oh, bro, I got to take
actually,
a lap.
You know what?
You were
lazy.
I got to do better.
I'm going to give you a better answer. I was trying to find what were the Orioles' weaknesses last year. Now, they didn't really have many because they won 101 games, but every team has something that they aren't elite in if they are an elite team, right?
Right.
No team is perfect.
Right.
So I looked at an Orioles team that finished 17th in home runs last year. And I thought to myself, why is that? Well, I look at Adley. Probably 20 home runs, right? Gunnar hit 28 last year. But is he like a 40 home run guy? No.
I think he can hit 30 this year.
I mean, he might be able to hit 30.
Yeah.
But Anthony Santander, like you go through the roster, and you think, okay, Gunnar might lead the team with 30, right? Well, how about a guy who can genuinely hit 40? I think Ryan Mountcastle is an enormous X factor for the Orioles. I truly think the Orioles need a thumper, right? I don't care if you strike out a lot, because the rest of the lineup is barely going to strike out, tons of doubles, balls in play. You need a guy when there's runners on first and second and two outs, or there's runners to hit the three-run home run. And that is Ryan Mountcastle to a T. The issue with Ryan Mountcastle is he hasn't been all that healthy, right? In 2021, fully healthy, hit 33 jacks in 144 games. In 2022, he played 145 games, but he didn't look quite like himself, and you saw kind of a power downgrade. And then last year, he did play 115 games, not fully healthy, with 18 home runs. If this guy can be a 35 home run threat, I think that makes the Orioles lineup a lot more dynamic, and I know that he has it in him. A 27-year-old, the problem is that the Orioles moved back left field in Camden Yards about 20 feet, so it's going to be harder for him to accomplish it and put up those gaudy power numbers. But he has the ability where if you move the fence back 50 feet, it wouldn't matter. He can hit piss missiles. So Ryan Mountcastle is the guy I'm IDing for the Orioles, where if he can provide that thump, the Orioles have one of the best lineups in the bigs. But he's not like, Grayson is the better answer, I guess, for X Factor, because it's like, do I think Grayson turns into an ace, or do I think Mountcastle, it's 40? Grayson by like a good amount.
Right.
But that's why I went to an X Factor, because if he can do that, how the hell are you going to compete with this Orioles lineup?
I really like that pick. There may not be a more drastic splits guy in Major League Baseball. I think Jock is up there. Whenever you think splits guy, you immediately go to Jock Peterson.
Yeah.
Might I point you in the direction of Ryan Mountcastle?
Yeah.
Against right-handed pitching last year, 280 at-bats, hit 235 with a 640 OPS. 140 at-bats against lefties, hit 340 with a 1053 OPS. He was 400 points better in the OPS department against left-handed pitching. He had double the homers in half the at-bats against left-handed pitching. 140 at-bats against lefties, 12 of his 18 home runs. Six in 280 ABs against right-handed pitching.
But that's not something that's long-standing with him. That was kind of just last year, right? We look at 2022, he had a 741 OPS against righties, 693 against lefties. We go back even to 2021. Better against lefties, put up an 843 OPS, but 770 against righties. This isn't a guy who just can't hit righties. It was last year where he couldn't hit a righty to save his life. I hope that doesn't compound and that just is his thing.
Yes, the struggles against right-handed pitching was unique to last year, but he's always been a lefty master. You look at his career numbers, 40 points better in his career against lefties as opposed to righties. So he's a 280 hitter compared to a 250 hitter against righties. And then OPS jumps 100 points. So he's an 850 career OPS guy against lefties, a 750 career OPS guy against righties.
So what do you think the Orioles should do, right? We saw them last year use Ryan O'Hearn a lot because they're mostly kind of doing a platoon over there, right? Ryan Mountcastle against lefties. Of course, he'll play some DH. And then Ryan O'Hearn against righties. Is that just what it's going to be? Because I think if we just run Ryan Mountcastle out, but to Ryan O'Hearn's credit, he's one of the prettiest sweepers making picks out of the dirt at first base. That matters to Peter Vision. It's not a stat anybody else cares about, but to me, sex appeal. He's pretty smooth over there at first. Does that matter to you?
It does. It matters a great deal to me. I will say we've gone this entire time without mentioning Heston Kerstad, which is
brutal. It's another one of these guys. Like,
okay, I know, which is why there's no offensive piece for me that's an X factor.
That's fair. I looked at an area of concern thinking to myself, yeah, the Orioles don't really have that Jorge Soler type, right? Or just a masher of baseballs where, oh, good, he's coming up with runners in scoring position. All right, he might strike out, but he also might change the game with a home run here. They have a bunch of guys who can hit 30, but if one guy could hit 40, it's Mountcastle. And if he does hit 40, good luck with the Orioles.
Yeah, 100%. All right, moving to Toronto. We got two more teams in the AL East, then we got the NL East after a quick break. But the Toronto Blue Jays, there are a lot of ways you can go. Vladdy just has to be better. Dalton Varsho, I'm rooting for really hard. I don't think a great Varsho transforms this Blue Jays team.
Had the same thought. I wrote down Dalton Varsho and I changed mine because I'm like, all right, if he puts up the 4.8 season in terms of F war that he did with Arizona, are the Blue Jays now winning the division? Probably not.
No.
But I do think he's going to be better. I don't want that understated. I think you and I both agree. We think Dalton Varsho is not going to be this pull side ground ball merchant that he's been.
No. There are some guys in Major League Baseball that I just consistently have this inherent bias.
Of course they're going to be good.
Yeah, you're going to be great. Dylan Carlson, of course you're going to get out of this funk. Oh, and they're that all is, the 4,000.
That's one of mine. I keep saying he's like a 120 WRC plus guy.
Right, and then he's center, not.
He like never was. But I feel like he is. So that's the narrative I'm pushing.
Carlson, for me, I still think Jake Myers can somehow make this shit work. But Dalton Varsho is probably in there too. And they're all kind of the same guy when you think about it. I will say I went to pitching again. It's hard for me. This division in particular, in the NL East, I really don't have a pitcher. But here, I think pitching is a big deal. Jose Berríos was so bad in 22. Then he was good in 23.
He's your X factor?
I think if you have a top two that can contend with anybody in that division, the Blue Jays have a fighting chance.
I'm going to give you a real one.
Okay.
Bowden Francis.
Bowden.
Bowden Francis. Are you sure it's Bowden?
Yeah,
I was watching highlights on YouTube and the announcer says Bowden Francis.
You have
to check that.
Bowden, holy
shit. Look at that. Ladies and gentlemen of the Just Baseball Show, the ball knower just turned into a wordsmith. Suck it, Jack. This is a huge moment for me. All right. I want to thank my parents because if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have gone to Syracuse University. I wouldn't have learned all of these incredible words, how to pronounce stuff. Yeah. And it's crazy. I just surpassed Jack in this. And I want to thank the listeners of the Just Baseball Show. This is a big moment for me. Bowden Francis, Jack. I mean, go back to the dictionary, bud.
That's crazy. I saw him in Buffalo last year. And I swear to God, it was Bowden.
Well, it's Bowden.
It's Bowden.
And Chris Bassett. Listen to this quote from Chris Bassett. If Ricky or Francis, Ricky Tiedemann, Bowden, Francis, needs to start for us this year, and they became our number one, I don't think anyone would be shocked. As crazy as that is, that's how good of stuff they have. That's how mature they are. And I saw that, and I was like, what the hell is Chris Bassett smoking? Ricky Tiedemann, I get it. He's a top prospect. He added 15 pounds this offseason.
Yeah.
He's weighing in at 240. The stuff, 99 miles an hour. Disgusting breaking balls. One of the best pitching prospects in baseball. And Bowden Francis? What's going on here? So I looked into him a little bit. I kind of like him. He's 94 to 95, and he's seen a little bit of an uptick in spring training. The curveball generated a 36% whiff rate, which is fantastic. And a lot of his pitches performed really well. Now, last year, he was mostly working out of the bullpen, right? He was a little bit of a swingman type, would get some innings late in games, wasn't much of a impact player for the Blue Jays. Really not much at all. But he did put up an ERA below 2, right? Peripherals, they're pointing more to the 3.5s. It's fine. We don't have a ton of data on him. Yeah. When I was watching him, I was looking at a guy who looks like he can place the fastball where he wants with a good amount of ride at 94-95, a really good curveball, and a developing slider. And I'm thinking to myself, if he adds a fourth pitch or he really defines that slider this year, this is a guy who I think can be an impact pitcher for the Blue Jays. And when I look at the Blue Jays rotation, it's filled with non-X factors, in my opinion. Like, I think all of them are just going to do exactly what they've been doing for the last 30 years. Like, Kevin Gausman is just going to do what he does every single year. Berríos, I think 2022 was just his kind of down year, right? He was great with the Twins, struggled initially with the Blue Jays, settles in, kind of like what we think Varsho is going to do. I look at a guy like Chris Bassett. Like, Chris Bassett's just going to throw 90-mile-an-hour, like, sinker cutters for the next 40 years. I think it's just that's what he's going to do, and he's going to be fine for 200 innings. Right. And Yusei Kikuchi, I think, was kind of last year's X factor, and I think at this point, what, 4.3 ERA and 160 innings for Kikuchi, maybe a little bit higher, maybe a little bit lower. I think that's fair. I think we know what we're going to get, but what are we going to get from the five spot in their rotation? Alek Manoah has been sent to the moon, basically. Yariel Rodriguez is dealing with a back issue. He's not even going to start in this rotation to start the year. I don't know what their plan is with him. So they need a five starter. And Bowden, not Bowden, Bowden Francis could be the guy. I'm not saying he's going to win the Cy Young, and I am saying that Chris Bassett, I want to be introduced to his dealer, because to put him in number one stuff, I don't know about that, but I like the confidence. I do. Sometimes you need a little bit of rational confidence to give to a rookie like Bowden Francis. I like this guy. I might be a little bit in.
That's a way better pick than Berríos.
Better. Not even close.
The pick of the show. We haven't done the analyst, and that's the pick of the show. I didn't even know how to say his freaking name. I was saying it wrong last year.
I've been on a heater. You've said a lot of my picks are good picks, and I beat you in a wordsmith competition. This is a big day for me.
Is it always a competition?
It wasn't a competition. It's kind of like, is it a competition between like Duke and Arkansas State?
And I'm
Duke. Arkansas. I was Arkansas State. Like, I just pulled the upset, but I had to.
I thought I was Arkansas State.
No. You're in terms of wordsmithing. Yeah, I'm Arkansas Duke? State. You're Duke, 100%.
Dude, I don't want to be like Filipowski. He's just
like I just ran the court. I just rushed the floor. I mean, this is my Super Bowl.
I'll take it, but I don't cry like Duke. I'll say I'm Purdue. How about that, Purdue?
Always a first round exit. And you're a fraud.
I am a fraud. Everybody that listens already knows that. We're not breaking any new news.
Right, fine. You're okay. Purdue. You're Zach Edey.
That's fine. I'm Matt Painter, man. Purdue. You're Fairleigh Dickinson. I'm Purdue. Wrapping up the AL East with the Tampa Bay Rays. I'm going to cheat.
Ooh.
Two. Taj Bradley, Ryan Pepiot. That duo. They need starting pitching so bad. So bad. Which one did you choose? I feel like you chose one.
I think you know which one I choose.
Pepiot.
Pepiot. I'm just so high on him. I remember when the last year in the second half of the season, you could never find value on the Dodgers ever. I mean, they're the Dodgers, right? In terms of betting markets. Also, shout out BetMGM, Code Just Baseball.
Yes.
You can never find value. But the one pitcher that was always reasonably priced by the Dodgers standards was Ryan Pepiot. So that's when I was betting on the Dodgers a lot. And I watched this guy pitch during the second half.
Awesome.
And I thought to myself, holy shit, they found another one. He had 5 walks to 38 strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
In 2022, he had 42 strikeouts and 27 walks. So the fact is, if he can find this, and this command is real, it's kind of like when we talk about Joe Boyle with the Athletics.
Right.
Tons of stuff. If he can figure out how to throw it in the strike zone, he's going to be disgusting. I view Pepiot in a similar manner. Now, Joe Boyle, I think, has more command concerns, but possibly better stuff, or at least
way
more
better.
High-octane Not velocity.
Possible. Right.
Exactly. But in terms of just stuff that's moving all over the place, Pepiot has it. And especially why I think he's the X factor a little bit over Taj Bradley is the Rays already had Taj Bradley last year. He's already kind of made a little bit of an impact with the Rays. He's kind of on this progression with them, while Pepiot is the guy that they got for Tyler Glasnow. So it's more important just for the, you know,
the optics
fans, right? The optics, exactly, is a perfect word. That's why, you know, you're Purdue. I'm
there's Purdue, there. Man.
Yeah. The optics of it is super important for the Rays as well. And I think he's going to be dominant. I think outside of Zach Eflin, we're going to look back and say Ryan Pepiot is the number two in this rotation.
I wonder how Savali's going to do. I've got questions about Savali, but
I think he's going to be great.
There's way more volatility with what Pepe and Bradley can put out for Tampa. Pepe, you hit everything that I wanted to hit with Ryan Pepe. The thing that jumps out is, and he's not Joe Boyle stuff over command, because Boyle's like 101, 102. Pepe was amazing changeup, Gavin Stone-level changeup, where the changeup was a big league pitch when he was in high A, double A. And he gets there, and he was so not confident in 2022. But he shows up, he thinned out big time in 2023, and you mentioned the walk numbers. He cut the walk rate from 17% to 3%. That, in turn, does wonders for foot traffic on the base paths. In 2022, in those 36 innings, opponents only hit 200 against him, but they had a 350 OBP. Opponents hit 180 against him this past year in his 42 innings, so a 20-point drop, but a 220 OBP. So a 20-point drop in batting average against, but an 120-point drop in OBP against.
It's clear how much better he got. And he's also 26 years old versus Taj Bradley, who just turned 23.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also a time where, all right, Pepio, let's see what you got. If Bradley struggles again, I think it's going to be fine. But to your point of why I can see us both grouping them in the same is because if Taj Bradley is fantastic, which he can be.
And he wasn't last year.
I think he's going to be. I think both him and Pepio, I mean, I'm super high on the Rays this year. Just like I kind of am every year, because I know who they are. And they consistently just continue to do it year after year. I think Pepiot's going to be great. I think Bradley's going to be great. I chose Pepiot as the X factor just because I think he can be more dominant than Bradley can this season.
And I like it. All right, we're going to do the NL East to wrap. Before that, quick break. The Atlanta Braves were the best team in baseball last year. Depending on how you slice it, they may be the best team in baseball again this year. Who is the X factor for the Atlanta Braves? I don't look at the lineup because the lineup remains almost entirely unchanged. Kelnick can blow the roof off of it, but Kelnick has been dreadful in spring training. There's really nobody that I could ID in that lineup. So I turn to the rotation and I go to the guy that was one of the pitchers of the generation before he dealt with injury after injury after injury after injury. We know what Strider can do, and Strider has been on the mound since he debuted. Freed was unavailable last year with a bunch of finicky injuries, but he is back. He's healthy. We assume Freed is going to put in a whole year in his contract here. Chris Sale is the X factor for the Atlanta Braves. If Chris Sale is healthy, if he's sitting 94, and if Chris Sale gives them 120 innings this year, this takes them to levels that we have arguably never seen in baseball.
Yeah, I got really nothing to add. Chris Sale was mine. The only thing I will add is you covered on the field. Let's talk about off the field. And I've already uttered this sentiment before. The Braves need an edge. They need a motherfucker. They need a guy who's going to get in people's grills and say, stop being lazy. You're way better than this. Look how talented you are. Look at the production. Acuna. No, I'm just kidding. You're better than this.
Best player in the world.
Yeah. Go up to it. Could you be like, you suck right now. You've only hit 10 runs this week. You could hit 12. No. But I think they need a guy like that. And another reason I bring it up, Alex Anthopoulos was on Foul Territory. Our friends over there are Foul Territory, mm-hmm. which is a great show. He was speaking about how it's important that they're looking at the makeup of a player. Right, they're not going to engage, and to quote him directly, they're not going to engage unless they think that the player can help them. Obviously, they're not just compiling a team of nice guys.
Correct.
But the way that he described Chris Sale's maturation, his personality, and how much of a fit he is on the Braves, from the Red Sox, it really got me excited for him. And then I watch him in spring training, and I'm looking at the velocity. And I'm thinking to myself, Jack's favorite player is now an Alex Anthopoulos guy. And when you're an Alex Anthopoulos guy, you don't get paid anything, but you're really, really good. And the Braves still paid Chris Sale. So I'm thinking to myself, all right, The Braves paid him more. They wanted to extend him beyond the original contract. He's going to be so, so good. And if he's so, so good, Braves might be better than the Dodgers. I mean, yes. If he's so, so good, right? We're talking about the Dodgers, historic. The Braves are right there. I mean, we could go toe for toe, this guy versus this guy. They match up. But Chris Sale, if he's good, say goodnight. I mean, say goodnight. Because he adds not only on the field, but in the locker room, which I think is almost as impactful.
The Braves lineup is better than the Dodgers lineup. I will continue screaming that from the mountaintops.
Because the Dodgers, their front four, it's as good as any front four in the history of the game.
It's amazing.
The Braves have like the eighth best front four in the history of the game. And then they have like Sean Murphy hits seventh. We like forgot. Michael Harris is my guy this year. I think he's going to go crazy. The Dodgers, like, they don't have that level of Michael Harris could be a perennial all-star hitting ninth. Like Orlando Arcia, we make fun of him. All-star.
Of the litter started shortstop in the all-star game.
Should he have? Maybe not, but he also had an argument. I agree. No, I'm just trying to somehow find anything. I mean, yeah, they're crazy. And if Chris Sale is good.
I wonder what Charlie Morton is going to look like this year. I'm also fascinated by Reynaldo Lopez. I found it fascinating that.
See his velo?
Lopez, he's
today horrible. He was like 94 today.
Really?
Yeah, bad. His fastball was down 6.8 miles an hour.
And that happens the day after they option AJ Smith Shawver, who I thought was putting up an exceptional spring, and that changeup looked gross.
Really surprised to see that. I'm glad you brought it up.
I thought it was a head scratcher, and that's a guy that I am super duper high on this year because he enters such a low stress environment. Last year, he was fast tracked. It's going to be a pressure cooker when you make your way from high A to the big leagues in the span of 2 months. But Smith Shawver this year, I think he should get an opportunity. It's kind of the anti Grissom, where Grissom got up and then he got no opportunity this past year. AJ Smith Shawver should get an opportunity as the five. And if he is following Strider, Fried, Sale, Morton, dude, you're playing with house money. Especially as a 22-year-old. So I did find that move interesting. I get it, especially if you think that Reynaldo Lopez can be a serviceable five starter, but I think they could blow the top off the division with AJ as their five.
That's why I wanted to bring it up real quick with Reynaldo Lopez to AJ Smith Shawver and say to myself, why did they send him down? I mean, Reynaldo Lopez today, I misquoted myself. He wasn't down 6.8 miles an hour in the four seam, but he was down 4 miles an hour. Like, he maxed out today at 95.7.
His average
is 98.2. Slider down 5 miles an hour. Curveball down 6 miles an hour. Changeup down 4 miles an hour.
Is that compared to last big league season?
Yes.
He was working in one inning spurts.
100%. But still. I mean, that's a decent chunk. I'd get it if it's 1-2. 4 or 5 across the board?
Yeah. It is weird. We'll see, man.
Why are we sending down AJ Smith Shawver? I just don't get it. But I mean, who cares? Like, it doesn't matter. They're going to be fine.
The Braves. The Miami Marlins are a different beast. And the Miami Marlins made one truly notable splash this offseason. And it was a cheap splash. It was $5 million. Tim Anderson is my X factor for the Miami Marlins. They are dealing with a lot of starting pitching issues right now. Jesus Luzardo, the expectations and the reliance on him is increased tenfold. You've got Edward Cabrera going down after Sandy's going to miss the entire year. And Braxton Garrett is hurt too. So you rely on Orion Weathers, who looks good. AJ Puck is making his jump back into the rotation. I wouldn't fault you at all for Puck being your X factor. Puck was the runner-up for me. He's not.
There's one clear X factor for me.
Who is it?
Jazz Chisholm is the X factor every year. Every year. Because we know what he can do. If he stays healthy and achieves everything that Jazz Chisholm thinks himself that he can achieve, we're looking at a 30-30 center fielder. that puts him up with some of the best players at the position, at a premium position, which then vaults him into some of the best players in Major League Baseball. But can he? I don't think he can. But if he does do it, that makes the Marlins offense just so much better. And when I'm looking at the starting rotation, I am looking at a group that does look a lot more damaged than it did last year. Marlins' credit, they did finish eighth in ERA as a staff, as a starting pitching staff. And in the bullpen, that was their worst by ERA standards. They ranked 21st. But what am I going to tell you? JT Chargois is their X factor this year. And I'm looking at an offense that was 19th in OPS, 22nd in home runs, and 23rd in stolen bases. 22nd in home run, 23rd in stolen bases. Jazz Chisholm changes that a ton while playing a healthy center field if he develops as a defender. That's why he is just by far the X factor for the Marlins. If he flounders, again, the Marlins are doomed to mediocrity once again, which I think is going to happen, but we'll see.
Tim Anderson has batting title ability.
Okay.
He's not going to win the batting title because Luis Arraez is going to win the batting title, but
Michael Harris is going to win the batting title.
Okay. Go ahead. No, he's going to lead the league in hits. That was what you were teasing.
I know.
I don't like the batting title one, but I like the hits leaders take.
Hit 325 in the second half.
That's crazy.
That's pretty good.
It is pretty good. Arraez will be better. We'll see. But if they've got two guys that are hitting over 300 at the top of that order, man.
You're right. No, I mean, you're right, because I also said something that I don't think is going to happen, and you just did the same, right? Like, yes, technically, that is in the cards because it's happened before. Will it? Probably not.
And your thing hasn't happened before.
My thing has literally never happened. So I'm actually the fraud.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the fraud. All right.
Purdue.
Full circle.
Flip-flopping Purdue.
Out of the first round. No, I get it. I'm the fraud here. I mean, the X factor for the Miami Marlins is Avisail Garcia. If he hits 40 home runs this year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Where we're at. I'm sorry, Marlins fans. You probably hate me right now. My 5-unit plays fading the Marlins. Every time we bring them up, I just talk negatively about them. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. It's not personal.
Just brutal. The New York Mets. Beatty. Brett Beatty is the X factor.
By far.
Or in an assessment year. You need to assess Brett Beatty. You know that Francisco Alvarez is going to be a top 10 catcher in baseball for the foreseeable future. You have a franchise cornerstone behind the plate. You're not asking yourself any questions about Francisco Lindor. You're asking yourself contract questions about Pete Alonso. But nothing about Pete Alonso's performance should impact the Mets needing to give that guy a check for $200 million. They need to pay that man. Brandon Nimmo, locked up long term. You have answers pretty much everywhere except third base. In the outfield, you learn about Gilbert, right? And you assume that Starling Marte is going to factor out at some point. He's going to work his way out of the plans.
Ronnie Mauricio, whatever the hell he does.
Well, he's out. He tore his ACL.
Oh, true. Forgot about that. Yeah, that's my bad.
Brett Beatty is the one guy at the major league level that I'm looking at, and it's like, I don't know who you are yet. Show me who you are.
Mm. I wrote down Brett Beatty as well. And I texted our managing editor, Ryan Finkelstein, and I said, who would be your X factor for the Mets? Mine is Brett Beatty. I just feel like this is a year where you have to see what you have with a third baseman. And he said, Brett Beatty, number one. And he also said, did you know the Mets, from the third base position, ranked dead last in terms of production at third base? Among all 30 teams, they were dead last in third base production.
I think
about it. Eduardo Escobar, Brett Beatty, struggling. I mean, they were terrible at third.
They were really bad. It makes sense. I think it was Ryan Finkelstein that wrote up a piece a couple years ago. Let's see. Yeah, Fink. August 12th, 2021. Years later, Mets still searching for David Wright's replacement. It wasn't. I'm going to go read the article after this, and I want to say that Beatty was a big focal point in that article. But man, he's not going to be David Wright. We've learned that. Can he be an everyday guy at third base for the New York Mets for the next 6 years? I don't know yet.
I don't know yet either. I still think so. Right? Are you off him? I'm not.
I'm not off him. But there needs to be a point where you show me something.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely showed you something in the minor leagues. And he is at the big league level. I know, but he's also 24 years old. He hasn't had like a ton of run in Major League Baseball yet. All right. Like he came up in 2022, played 11 games. Just, you know, it's a cup of coffee. It's not even real. And then last year he struggled, right? He was terrible. He was a negative F4 player. He was 68 WRC plus, played 108 games. I just don't think it's truly enough sample size for us to say, oh yeah, I'm out.
No, and it's not, oh, he's cooked if he's not good this year, but I am selling my shares of Brett Beatty as a future star.
I'm not doing anything.
Okay.
I'm not doing anything. Another one that Fink brought up, which I loved. I mean, if Luis Severino can find anything, mm-hmm. that's huge for the Mets.
Mm-hmm.
Will he? I don't know, right? I've been watching him as a Yankee fan for years, and you know, the stuff, right? You go on Baseball Savant, you say, oh, the stuff is back. But it was really a location thing. It was everything was right down the middle. And it didn't seem to have that similar ride on the fastball, that, you know, 18, 19 inches of induced vertical break. It didn't look like that. And he was just getting pelted when he was throwing it down the middle. Now, if he can regain some of that, what he had with the Yankees in the early goings, I mean, he was a finalist for the Cy Young at one point. Do I think he's going to be there? No, but if he regains his stuff and his arm's healthy, he's still a talented pitcher. I think he's still a big X factor, but Brett Beatty is the answer in my opinion, especially because Steve Cohen, and they came out and said, this is a bridge year. In a bridge year, you focus on who your core assessment is, and that's Brett Beatty.
Yes. Young player assessment. I do think it's a big year for Mark Vientos, but his possible outlook doesn't change the Mets as much as Brett Beatty's, I guess, variety of outcomes could change the Mets.
Yes, and it could change the Mets for the future, which mm-hmm. is also important too.
Mm-hmm. Two more teams. The Philadelphia Phillies are next, and then we'll wrap with the Nats. The Phillies, where are you going? This was a weird one.
See, this is also a weird one because it's like everybody on the team, I kind of know who they are. So who's the one player where I'm not sold on yet? Or I'm not over the moon, or I'm not against? Who is it for you?
No, who's it for you?
Christopher Sanchez.
Oh, okay.
The reason I pick Christopher Sanchez is teams like the Phillies, similarly to the Braves or the Orioles, where are your weaknesses? It ain't on offense where you're sixth in OPS. You would say, well, then it's on defense with the Phillies. But what am I supposed to say? Johan Rojas changes the culture of the Phillies because he can run it down in center field? Of course, I'm not going to tell you that because you and I both know that's not true. Mm-hmm. The bullpen, there's like three of them broke out last year. So I'm not going to the bullpen. So I went to the rotation. Who are the two most solid, you know what you're going to get guys in Major League Baseball? It's probably Wheeler and Nola, right? And I already think I know what I'm getting from Ranger Suarez. And I feel like I know what I'm getting from Taiwan Walker, and it's negative. But who's this Christopher Sanchez guy? The 26-year-old last year in 99 innings put up a 3.44 ERA, didn't walk anybody, kept the ball on the ground, and put up a 3.09 xFIP, 3.77 expected ERA. Pretty good peripherals. Got a nasty changeup. If he can be and build on this season and even throw 140 innings at a high threes, it's a valuable pitcher to have that I don't think is talked about at all when we talk about the Phillies. Imagine if he's a dude, right? What if he and Chris Sale put up the same year? I know that sounds crazy, but it's not impossible. What if they both have a 3.7 ERA and 140 innings? Is that out of the question?
It's not out of the question by any stretch. It's just the first time that Sanchez has done it, so let's see him do it again. But I'm with you. The number.
That's why X factor.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
If he's great.
Yes.
And I'm not telling you I'm sold on it.
Yeah.
But what I am saying is there are things to like here.
For sure.
Right? He doesn't walk anybody. He's got great off-speed pitches. He's got a fastball that's moving all over the place.
And you mentioned he keeps the ball on the ground.
Keeps the ball on the ground. Again, like there's not a lot of base runners here. No wonder the peripherals will like him. He doesn't give up a lot of home runs, even though he's pitching in the bank. When in the summer, it gets hot and balls just fly, and he didn't do any of that, right? So he's a guy I'm looking at, and Fangraphs right now has him projected around 130 to 140 innings, anywhere from a 4.06 ERA to 4.36. I think he's better than that. So if that's the innings and he's more three, let's say nine, maybe not as good as Chris Sale, but like that's a valuable pitcher to have.
Man, give me a 4-1 in that five spot. Give me a 4-1 and I'm very happy.
Because the offense is going to lead you.
Yes.
I mean, you just need Christopher Sanchez to keep you in games. And then you have the bullpen coming in. You're going to win a lot of Christopher Sanchez starts. And if you do, the Phillies could be one of those sneaky teams where we look at the end of the year. It's like, oh yeah, the Braves won 104. The Phillies won 97 or something like that. That's where I feel is the biggest X factor for Philly.
Got you. For me, I still think Alec Bohm has more in the tank.
Me too. Definitely. He's another guy. I always think he's better than he is. I think Alec Bohm is better than Bryson Stott, even though Bryson Stott is objectively better.
Well,
I still feel like Bohm is better.
The value there is defense. The value is defense. Bryson Stott is one of the better defensive second basemen in all of baseball. He's a good shortstop playing an elite second base. Like point to Turner all you want. Before the All-Star break last year, he was putrid. They still got in.
You know, he's an X factor. Bryce Harper is pretty good.
Uh-huh. Big time.
But Bryce actually almost considered him for the reason that if he goes for a 170 WRC plus, like he did in 2021, it was so funny. His best year with the Phillies, they missed the playoffs.
So people, No, that was crazy. I loved it.
Yeah.
Nick Castellanos is a popular pick to regress by many. I don't like that.
Oh, what if he's good? Who cares?
He's fine.
I mean, no, not who cares, but he's just good. He is just good. He'll probably be just good.
Bohm, for me, I'm like, can you hit 30? I feel like you can hit 30, but he hasn't hit 30.
If he faced all lefties, he could hit 40.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't, though.
I still feel like there's something left in Alec Bohm's progression, and his age 27 season may show us that. But it was hard. I was grasping at straws.
You know, in every draft from the top five picks, I always say, well, one's going to bust. And I always pick my bust with no research. And I just say, you're going to bust. Alec Bohm was my bust when he came out third overall out of Wichita State.
He's not a bust.
I just said bust. Yeah, I did the same with Drew Jones.
Look at you. Who was your bust from last year?
In the top five, who was my bust?
Was it Max
Clark? I'd have to look back. Max Clark was my bust, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
It doesn't make sense. Like, I hope everybody knows. I have to pick one of the five, and before I really dive into any of them, I just pick one to bust.
Yeah, there's no reasoning behind it.
No reasoning.
He's rooting for Alec Bohm and Max Clark and Drew Jones. It's just, you have to do it. It's one of those things.
Have to do it.
It's a necessary evil. I get it.
Yeah, it's a someone's got to do it. All these prospect guys. This guy, why this guy could be great. No, this guy is going to suck. Here's why. Yeah.
Why? Vibes.
Yeah, just vibes.
Let's tie a bow on this thing with the Washington Nationals. Mm-hmm. The expectations are very low for the Nats. This is an assessment period again.
Yep.
Which is why my eyes immediately went to CJ Abrams.
Oh, it's funny. Okay, keep going.
I think this is CJ Abrams' year to capitalize on the opportunity to rise to stardom. And we saw that start to happen at the end of last year. This is the first full year where we feel like CJ could be a finished product, or at least close to a finished product of the young version of CJ. Of course, his abilities are going to change over the course of his career. When he hits 30, he's not going to be the same guy as he is when he's 23 years old. But he already has a full stress-free year under his belt. He was not that good in the first half. He was really good in the second half. Can you be really good across an entire season? Because a really good CJ Abrams could hit 280 and could swipe 70 bases and can hit 15 home runs. There are options here for CJ Abrams to level up big time. And I think this is the year where he can level up big time.
100% agree with everything you said. And that's why he's not an X factor, if that makes sense, in my opinion of what an X factor is. Mm-hmm. Because I already think that's going to happen. And when we're talking about an assessment year, let's say he does the exact same thing as he did last year. Are the Nationals looking for another shortstop? I don't think they are.
No, they're not, but I'm disappointed.
So here's a guy that I think if he follows up what he did in 23, the Nationals are starting to think to themselves, do we have a starting catcher of the future? Kyber Ruiz was terrible last year by F4. He put up a 0.0 F4. He literally just showed up. No. And the reason I say that, you know, he was terrible is because he was bad defensively. He's a fine offensive piece, but the way he graded out in terms of framing, blocking, throwing out runners was below average. That's why he had a very low F4, even though he was basically playing every day. Kyber Ruiz, if we remember, was, I think, the second headliner in the Trey Turner and Max Scherzer deal from the Nationals to the Dodgers. The Dodgers, they gave up Josiah Gray, who the Nationals, you could say that's an X factor. I compare him kind of similarly to CJ Abrams, where it's like, this is just one of our guys. Mm-hmm. But is Kyber Ruiz one of your guys? Because if he's still this bad defensively and he doesn't take a step forward offensively, he cannot really be a part of the future. You could keep putting him out there, but if we're talking about a real Nationals rebuild where we're finding our guys and Kyber Ruiz does that again, can he be there? That's why I think he's an X factor for that.
And what sucks is they've already paid him. They already gave him that extension. They gave him
$5 million.
So he's under team control. They have club options in 31 and 32, but he's under team control if they so choose through 2032. It's a long
the thing. I mean, yeah, you could, right? If he's bad again and you're saying, well, this is a cheap catcher, you go around baseball, does anybody
think gonna take interested for that
in him? Someone's going to take him. So that's why I think this is a big year for him. And then if he breaks out, right, he takes a step forward offensively and is still just average defensively, that's then, all right, we got Abrams, we got Gray, we got Gore, and we got Ruiz.
Yeah.
And then you kind of build and find your other pieces.
Yeah. I saw Bleacher Report at Kyber Ruiz is the number 10 catcher in baseball heading into 2024, which.
Fuck it. I'm in. I mean, no, but I think Chris Bassett and Bleacher Report guys, they have their dealers and they're good. Like the stuff they're getting is awesome.
All right. Plug the merch, man. You can't tell me I hate the company today.
That's true. I wore a Bo Jackson shirt, which is not a part of the Just Baseball merch company, but
company.
Jack is, look at this episode. You're wearing merch and my words sound a little bit better. Actually, realistically, you also helped me during the episode. Whatever. Go get your Just Baseball merch. It's in the episode description. Just get your baseball merch. And if you don't want to spend a dime, we totally understand, but if you could rate and review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, 5 stars, really, really would appreciate it. And then use code JustBaseball and BetMGM. Get all of those promo phones you want to get your account loaded in with free money to get yourself ready for the MLB season. And if you're watching on YouTube, hit that big red subscribe button. Why not? I mean, why not? Right? It's free. We got tons of videos. I just put out all my wind tunnels. Go check those out on YouTube. For Jack McMullen, I am Peter Apple. We will be back on Friday. And with that, thank you.